Well, good evening, everyone. Let me welcome you to this latest LISI visiting speaker programme. I must say that this title is probably the most controversial that we've ever had in the 4 or 5 years that we've been doing. I remember making the announcement at the last meeting and sort of preparing to duck as I said it. But it gives me great pleasure to be able to welcome Dr. Kirill Dreza from Keele University. By way of background, Kirill is lecturer in politics at Keele University and director of the Keele Southeast Europe Unit. His main research areas are communist and post-communist politics, modernization and nationalism in the Balkans, and Pan-Slavism. He has contributed extensively on Balkan, Bulgarian and Macedonian affairs to the BBC World Service and Oxford Analytica, and has advised international consultancies, banks and governments. The topic of tonight's talk is Bulgarians in Macedonia and Macedonians in Bulgaria. Do they exist? Kirill, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, James. Right. Well, the short answer to this question is, do they exist? Well, they do. And you'll see in what kind of numbers we're talking about. That's the most interesting thing. So, first, let me make one disclaimer, as is the fashion. Please forgive me that Kosovo is not shown. Please forgive me that the Dardanelles are not shown properly. It's not a very good map, but what is good for me is that it shows the divisions of Macedonia very well. It even shows tiny bits of historical Macedonia that now belong to Serbia. It shows tiny bits of historical Macedonia that now belong to Albania, and bigger chunks, of course, the biggest, Greece. Second biggest is the Republic of Macedonia, formerly Yugoslav Macedonia, and the smallest, about 10% of historical Macedonia, is the Pillin Macedonia. So, after these disclaimers, here they are, the numbers. Right, so obviously not something that is worth talking much about on the face of it. Now, I'll make another disclaimer that when I'm talking about Macedonia throughout the talk, unless I say it otherwise, I'll mean the Republic of Macedonia, as I've said there, Republic of Macedonia, and so that no one will feel discriminated, occasionally there will be a Republic of Bulgaria. So, but when I talk about Macedonia, just for the sake of simplicity and not implying any particular position or name issue or whatever, I'll mean the Republic of Macedonia. So, the latest census, and there will be another, I'll make another qualifier about the census, because census politics is a very sensitive thing in Macedonia. There was a more recent census in Macedonia which collapsed amid controversy, and the Albanian community in Macedonia objected against the way the census was conducted. So I have to rely on the 2002 census as the most uncontroversial and recent census concerning Macedonia. Now, right, these are the figures. The 2002 census in Macedonia showed 1,417 ethnic Bulgarians, and one has to make the proviso that the majority of these self-declared ethnic Bulgarians actually do not originate from Macedonia itself, but from another part of former Yugoslavia, Eastern Serbia, where there was in Yugoslav times a recognized community of Bulgarians. So they are basically, that's the prevalent view in Macedonia itself, that when you talk about ethnic Bulgarians, by and large they're not local, but they come from this Eastern Serbia region. Moving on to the ethnic Macedonians, self-declared ethnic Macedonians in Bulgaria, 1,654, so proportionately, because Bulgaria is a bigger country, about 7 million, Macedonia is just over 2 million. We're talking about a smaller percentage of the population. there is another proviso concerning these Macedonians. Of these 1,654, it is calculated that about 500 originate in Pirin Macedonia, or calculated, polled in Pirin Macedonia. The rest are Macedonian citizens who live permanently in Bulgaria. So not only are the numbers small, but I have made them even smaller. Now, the ethnic Bulgarians that originate in the territory of historical Macedonia are a negligible quantity, if one looks at the 2002 census, and the ethnic Macedonians originating in Pirin Macedonia, another part of historical Macedonia, are also a negligible quantity. Now, let's have a look at the census dynamics of Macedonians in Bulgaria. So, when I'm talking about Bulgaria, it's the People's Republic of Bulgaria and the Republic of Bulgaria after 1990. Now, if you look at these figures themselves, you can see that there is a bit of volatility in numbers. Interestingly, the biggest number of recorded Macedonians in Bulgaria wasn't in the 1946 census, which is actually quite controversial, but in the 1956 census, which is not so controversial. And you can see that there is even a slight increase in the quantity of Macedonians in general and in their percentage, albeit a small one, that shows for Pirin Macedonia. Or again, I've put Pirin, meaning Pirin Macedonia, for short. And this goes, at that time it was the Blagoevgrad district. Previously it was the Gorna Jumaya, Upper Jumaya district. I think even earlier times it was Juma Ibala, it was the Turkish name of the place. And I think I'll stop at the Ottoman period. But basically, whatever this region was called, whether Gorna Jumaya or Juma Ibala or Blagoevgrad, it covered pretty much the Bulgarian chunk of historical Macedonia, what otherwise is known both in Bulgaria and Macedonia, not controversial, it's called Pirin Macedonia, it's quite a fair, a common denomination of the place. Now, before I go at what happened between 1956 and 1965, I've made the proviso that in the pre-1946 census, the category ethnic Macedonia did not exist. Ethnic Macedonia did not exist, not just in Bulgaria, actually in the territory of the Republic of Macedonia itself, in that case before 1948, in Royal Yugoslavia, what was there before the People's Republic of Macedonia. The 1934 census, which was the one before 1946, recorded about 85% ethnic Bulgarians in the Pirin region. So you can see that something is already happening there. There was a solid ethnic Bulgarian majority in 1934. 1946, there is a solid ethnic Macedonian majority going on until 1956. Then 1965, it goes back to not so solid as in 1934, but fairly solid Bulgarian majority in the Pirin district. So the recorded numbers 1965 are 9,632. Now, what happened before that is quite interesting to look at. In 1946, the Bulgarian Communist Party took a conscious decision to help the fostering of Macedonian ethnic consciousness in Pirin Macedonia and in Bulgaria as a whole. This was part and parcel of the negotiations with then Yugoslavia about the creation of a South Slav Federation, the Bled agreements and all that. But the key thing is that it was quite a reversal of previous policies. It was condemned by the then still existing opposition, the anti-communist opposition, as nation engineering along Soviet lines. And be it what may, this policy was implemented with considerable pressure by the local Bulgarian authorities that basically gave numbers as to how many Macedonians should be recorded in particular parts of Macedonia. Now, that's about the controversies of the 1946 census. Between 1946 and 1956, the policies of the Bulgarian Communist Party concerning the Macedonian self-determination did not change much, but the policy towards Yugoslavia did change a lot. Obviously, there was a break in 1948, but the interesting thing is that still the Bulgarian Communist Party thought that a Macedonian ethnogenesis was happening, and the core of it was in former Yugoslav Macedonia. The only thing is that it should be steered along anti-Titoist lines, and then basically Macedonian communists should be supported, ethnic Macedonian consciousness should still be supported, transmissions in the Macedonian language should continue, but of course with a very anti-Tito slant. That was the idea. 1955, there is general reconciliation between the Eastern Bloc and Yugoslavia, and then the Bulgarian Communist Party has to face up again to its policy towards Macedonia, Macedonians, the Macedonian ethnic question, the Macedonian national question, call it what you want. And at first there isn't much change, but there is a new man coming to the top, Todor Živkov, and he is gradually making his mark on the Bulgarian Communist Party. Around 1958 there was the first change of policy. It obviously came after the 1956 census. It did not affect it. And let me say that this census is perhaps the most interesting one because, unlike 1946, no administrative pressure was reported. And still, there would be 187,000, about 2.5% of the population of Bulgaria, recorded itself as Macedonian. And the Pyrenean region was 64%. So, whatever the original implementation of a pro-ethnic Macedonian policies in the 1940s, they have taken root by 1956. Maybe not very deeply, but they have taken some root. And also, you have to understand what is the situation in a socialist state of the Soviet type. Is the population through severe repression has been culled into basically looking up to the authorities and expecting, well, to be told basically what to do. As no perceptible change was clear concerning the Macedonian question, quite often the pollsters asked, how were you recorded last time? Macedonian? Macedonian. Fine. They didn't object. I'm not saying they objected. Obviously, for the bulk of the population, whether they'll be recorded Macedonian, being recorded Macedonian was not objectionable, to say the least. There would be people that would go beyond that and be actively fighting for a Macedonian ethnic consciousness, but the bulk of the population was content to be counted as Macedonian and didn't attach great importance to that particular question. It wasn't controversial for them. Around 1958, there is a change of policy, and increasingly the argument is being made within the Bulgarian Communist Party that a gross mistake, was made in the 1940s, particularly around 1946, in the fostering of Macedonian consciousness. The real change comes in 1963. There is a plenum of the Bulgarian Communist Party, and it explicitly takes the decision that the policy was wrong in 1946, that this was a betrayal of Bulgarian national interests, it was a betrayal of the Bulgarian people, etc., etc., and this policy has to be reversed. The proviso was made that no one should be forced to choose either to be a Bulgarian or Macedonian. I think at first this was indeed the case, but there was a different line from the top. And the Communist Party organizations on the spot already got wind what was expected of them. And what was expected of them is that, as previously it was expected of them to make people, sign people as Macedonians, now it was expected of them to sign them as Bulgarians. And this is what they did. And 1965 we have the result. Severe drop in the number of people who declare themselves as ethnic Macedonians, but still they do exist. About over 9,000 people did stick out their heads and declare to the Poles that they are Macedonian rather than Bulgarian. And then there was another census in 1975 where ethnic categories were severely restricted. Just Turks, Bulgarians, Armenians, and I think Jews were allowed. And then we move straight to 1992, and we have a slight upsurge in the numbers of self-declared Macedonians. Then in 2001, they dropped by half, and then in 2002, they dropped down even further. So, I think to sum up what has happened with these figures, we have a period of Macedonian nation building in period Macedonia, very short period, about two years in full bloom, and then there is a period of inertia until about 1958, in some respects up to 1963. Then there is a sharp reversal of policy in 1963, and then Macedonian nation building is replaced with Bulgarian nation building in this same place, and years pass, new generations grow. The legacy of 2 years of Macedonian cultural autonomy and fostering of ethnic consciousness in 1946-47 is becoming more and more distant. The people that were youngster then are old people now, and the new generations think differently, the bulk of them. So we have these numbers that we have. But let me, on the basis of what we've seen in the figures, let me say several words about what far is contemporary Macedonian nationalism in Bulgaria. However small the numbers, if one looks, as we will see further on the figures, I think the number of people who consider themselves ethnic Macedonian is underestimated. And partly because people fear the authorities, they don't want to stick their head out, they find it disadvantageous, and generally they feel the line is different. So the number is big, is bigger than 1,000 and something. How much, I don't know. One of the leaders of the pro-ethnic Macedonian organizations argued that they're at least 5,000 to 10,000 rather than 1,000, so we are going back to, according to his claim, we're going back to the 1992 figures as being more precise rather than these figures here. Now, what was happening concerning the self-declared ethnic Macedonians in Bulgaria was part and parcel of a wider polemics with Yugoslavia. So the ups, it followed pretty closely the ups and downs of relations between Bulgaria and Yugoslavia. When relations were good, as was the case before 1968, it was fairly easy to buy Macedonian papers all over Bulgaria. And after 1968, Nova Macedonia suddenly disappeared from Bulgarian news agents. The reason was, well, the trigger was disagreements concerning the invasion of Czechoslovakia, but the Bulgarian communist authorities used the occasion to push further a clear position on the Macedonian question. 1968 is the year when a small brochure on the Macedonian question was circulated to Communist Party activists in Bulgaria. It gave basically the party line in very clear sort of black and white what was the position concerning the ethnic Macedonian question. This line was that indeed, Macedonian and Macedonian nation building is happening, Macedonian nation is being formed, but territorially it is limited to the Republic of Macedonia, the former, the Yugoslav part of Macedonia. Pirin Macedonia was not really involved in this nation building, and it continues to be part of the Bulgarian ethnos. And, of course, the another important part of this line is that before 1946, we cannot really talk about the Macedonians. And they were part and parcel of the wider Bulgarian nation. So these are the basic lines of what the Bulgarian communist authorities' line on the Macedonian question was taking shape. More ominously, and quite typical of the authorities that were in power in Bulgaria at the time, when the line has changed, they start punishing people who deviate from the line. This is what they do. 1946, lots of greater Bulgarian nationalists were sent to concentration camps, many of them from supporters of Vantru Mikhailov from Pirin Macedonia, which was a stronghold of the Mikhailovists, of the pro-Bulgarian or pro-independent Macedonian politicians in former Bulgarian Macedonian. So 1946, it was the turn of the greater Bulgarian chauvinists and nationalists, and at that point, of course, the pro-ethnic Macedonian activists were very happy with that. 1964 and onwards, it was the turn of the pro-ethnic Macedonian activists, and then, of course, whoever has survived the Stalinist concentration camps will basically say, well, the communist authorities are nasty and whatever, but at least they've corrected their mistake concerning Macedonia. That's from 1964 onwards. And of course, as communist authorities do, as I said, this is how they deal with mistakes. They basically repress people. This is how they correct their mistakes. And this is what they did with in the trial of Macedonian nationalists. The people that were put on trial in 1964 were people that wrote on a restaurant, "Long live independent Macedonia." This is why they were put on trial. You can see that the threshold of repression was very low. But this is not something just to do with ethnic Macedonians. People who wrote similar things about condemning the invasion of Czechoslovakia got an even shorter straw by the communist authorities. This was the time. This is how people were treated that deviated from the official line. Of course, if one goes further, 1984 would come the turn of the Turks. They would be repressed, etc., etc. But I don't want to go into this. Now let's look at the census dynamics of Bulgarians in Macedonia itself. So this is the 2002 number. And let's see how the numbers move. The smallest number of people recorded as ethnic Bulgarians in Macedonia is in the period 1948, in the 40s and until the mid-1950s. At that time, also because of the break with the Informbüro, it was not particularly advantageous. It was downright dangerous to be Bulgarian in former Yugoslavia, not just in Macedonia. It is at this time that a few of the ethnic Bulgarian minority in the Republic of Serbia started calling themselves Yugoslavs. It was more, it was less dangerous at that time. Rather than being called informed Birovci, pro-informed Birov supporters, and all the stigma that was attached to belonging to the Stalinist camp. Now, you can see that in 1971, a greater number of people recalled themselves as ethnic Bulgarians. Now, it may well be the case that there was a great immigration from Eastern Serbia, or maybe some people that previously thought of themselves as ethnic Bulgarian before 1948 decided to stick their head out. There certainly were some of these. I've spoken with some of them. There were people that for 30, 40 years have been quite consistent on that, and they were quite scaring their neighbors. I remember going to Venice to interview one such individual, the neighbors basically were shaking their head and says, "This Georgi will bring again trouble to all of us." This is how they were reacting. So he was basically a marked man. So you can see 1981, the number is falling. And then it goes on, there's a slight volatility, slight increase in 1994. It's interesting, this increase in 1994, because between 1991 and 94 there was no migration from Eastern Serbia into Macedonia. So it must have been some people locally, maybe all these 300 of them, that decided to stick their head out and call themselves ethnic Bulgarian. Now, as we shall see later on, there are ethnic Bulgarians in Macedonia. They have organizations. They do figure in the media. What is their rationale? Why they think that they shouldn't consider themselves ethnic Macedonians? Now, their arguments. And these arguments pretty much are similar to what has been the argument in socialist Bulgaria in Zhivkov's time and in post-communist Bulgaria. Their argument is that before 1944, the bulk of the population in Vardar Macedonia and ex-Yugoslav Macedonia considered itself Bulgarian. So they make the argument that in 1941, April, this population, when Yugoslavia collapsed, created Bulgarian action committees that took civilian control over much of Vardar Macedonia before the arrival of Bulgarian troops. And these people actively were involved with the Bulgarian authorities, the creation of Bulgarian schools, churches, etc., etc., and they were severely, bloodily repressed by the communists from 1944 onwards. The number of trials that happened there, they're well covered. I mean, there is one good source in English, even though it was published in the 1970s, Palmer and King on the Yugoslav Communist Party and the Macedonian question, and that's probably still the best account in English, even though it's clearly dated. But a lot of these about these trials has come in the media in the Republic of Macedonia. So we now know much more about what was happening in the 1940s in Veles, in Štip, in Skopje, who was shot, why he was shot, etc., etc. What was happening there at the time in Yugoslav Macedonia wasn't qualitatively different from what was happening in communist Bulgaria. Pretty much the same kind of people were being shot, often without trial. This was part and parcel of the communist takeover. Now, going back to another cause célèbre of the pro-Bulgarian ethnics in Macedonia, their argument is that not only was about the repression from 1944 onwards, but it was preceded by a previous bout of repression after 1912, after the Balkan Wars. And their argument is, well, I've given this edition of the quote from Encyclopedia Britannica, which states pretty impartially at the time what was considered, what was thought about the Slavonic population of Macedonia at the time. So they formulated, you can see fairly cautiously, the bulk of which is regarded by almost all independent sources as Bulgarians. Such was the position of the Carnegie report of 1914, etc., etc. We can talk about the veracity, importance, or whatever of this. I'm just registering it as something that exists. The important thing to remember is that there was an extensive network of Bulgarian churches and schools, which was destroyed after 1912 by the Serbian authorities, and then continued to be destroyed by the Royal Yugoslav authorities. Then, of course, on top of this comes the communist repression and the fostering of Macedonian ethnic consciousness. So these are the grievances, and this is what fires the Bulgarian, pro-Bulgarian ethnics in Macedonia. Now, going back to the Macedonian parties and activists in Bulgaria, this is the... I must say one thing that comes very clearly. However small, the ethnic Macedonian activists in Pirin Macedonia are nothing but very persistent. They have been trying again and again and again and again throughout the 1990s to register political organizations. They've successfully registered non-party organizations, just associations. And this OMO Ilinden Pirin, United Macedonian Organization Ilinden Pirin, is just the latest incarnation of something that has been, they have been trying to register pretty much with the same people from 1990 onwards. Immediately after liberalization, democratization of Bulgaria began after the fall of Zhivkov, the pro-ethnic Macedonian activists made their appearance in Sofia on the public rallies. They were there from not from the very first rally, but from the second one. They were all there, the ones who live in Sofia. So, just very briefly, this is the most United Macedonian organization in the Pyrenees, is the most active one. It also has the most notable leader, Stoikov, there on the picture. This is the flag, and this is the emblem of OMO Ilinden. You can see the Stara Vergina there, which I don't have to explain any further about what their ideology is. I mean, it's enough to see the Stara Vergina, and then you get what they are. I think they, just to sum it up in one sentence, they believed in antiquization well before Gruevski believed in it, and well before antiquization became fashionable in the Republic of Macedonia. So, 1999, they managed to register as a political party in the Blagoevgrad court, and then even participated in municipal elections, got 3,000 votes. So, in the year 2000, the Bulgarian Constitutional Court bans it as a separatist party, and luckily for them, later in the same year, a case that they have brought to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg from 1995 in several incarnations, the court in Strasbourg pronounced against Bulgaria in this case, and we can talk about this verdict, what it involved. Bulgaria had to pay damages, a very important landmark for this organization is from 2007, it is a full member of the European Free Alliance. The European Free Alliance, that would be the Corsicans, the Bretons, kind of groups that aspire to nationhood or to autonomy or basically fight against the over-centralized states in Europe. The Moravians, the Silesians, etc., etc. So, going to the leader, Stoikov, a fairly young man, born in 1974 in Sandanski, and he was an activist, a Macedonian ethnic activist from age 16. And then he graduated history at Skopje University, at St. Cyril and Methodius University in Skopje in 1997, master's in history 2003. 2013, he defends a doctorate, and the topic is the term Slavs and Bulgarians in Macedonia and Bulgaria from the 7th to the 13th century, emergence and significance. He was contributing editor to Narodna Volja, People's Will. This is the header of this particular newspaper. The interesting thing about this newspaper is that it was much luckier than the ethnic Macedonian organization. This has continuously existed in Bulgaria from 1992, and you can actually buy it in kiosks, and it has not been particularly repressed. I think this is what I read in Narodna Volja itself, much to their surprise. For some reason, it wasn't particularly repressed. You can buy it, you can subscribe to it. There were no court cases about it. The person who founded this organization, and there is a British connection for you, he's someone who worked for 20 years in the BBC Bulgarian service. Alexander Christov, I had the chance to meet him in the mid-1990s, to talk with him, very interesting individual. He's now not anymore with us, but basically, to put it bluntly, it was his BBC pension that funded the People's Will. So the British taxpayer indirectly has founded the only kind of monthly Macedonian and pro-ethnic Macedonian newspaper in Bulgaria. Actually, to make things even more complex, the first issue was published in Australia in 1980. Now, let's look at the Bulgarian activists and parties in Macedonia. If I can make the comparison between the pro-Macedonian and the pro-Bulgarian activists, respectively, pro-Macedonian and Bulgarian, pro-Bulgarian and Macedonian, the educational level of the pro-Bulgarian activists in Macedonia is usually higher. The social status, their social status is usually higher. The pro-Macedonian activists in Bulgaria are usually middle-ranking intellectuals, school teachers, actors, not, I wouldn't call them uneducated, I wouldn't call them particularly prominent either. The pro-Bulgarian activists in Macedonia are usually, many of them fairly prominent, and many of them are very prominent politicians. Certainly there are no pro-Macedonian activists in Bulgaria that can claim a former prime minister, former minister of culture, etc., etc., a few former ministers, plenty of writers, plenty of journalists, and a few, maybe quite a few, economic opportunists. Perhaps the bulk of these 50,000 Bulgarian passport holders, which is hold almost a mythical status in Macedonia. It's quite a controversial issue. Now, this organization, the Association of Citizens Ratko, registered in Ohrid, is nowadays probably not the most important of pro-Bulgarian organizations in Macedonia, but the interesting thing about it is that it fairly closely mirrors the path of Omo Ilinden in Bulgaria. In the year 2000, it was founded and registered in Ohrid in a local court. There was an immediate protest by the local veterans of the anti-fascist struggle. 2001, declared unconstitutional and banned by the Constitutional Court of the Republic of Macedonia. Exactly the same as happened with the Omo Ilinden, also banned by the Constitutional Court in the Republic of Bulgaria. And again, in 2009, this ban was condemned by the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, and Macedonia had to pay damages. So you can see in both cases, the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg is performing a stern, valiant service, forcing both governments to pay damages for wanting to ban ethnic organizations. Perhaps the most influential Bulgarian, pro-Bulgarian organization in Macedonia is the Bulgarian Cultural Club, a non-governmental organization which has affiliate organizations in quite a few cities in Macedonia. The most controversial, maybe not the most prominent member, but certainly one of the leadership was journalist Miroslav Rizinski, who was imprisoned in 2011. There is a typo there, for which apologies, and he claims that he was falsely accused and set up, etc., etc. Now, going to the more general issues about the existence of Bulgarians and Macedonians in the wrong place. There are popular narratives in both countries that claim that pro-Macedonian, respectively pro-Bulgarian activists are agents, which is the charitable view, and the less charitable view is that they're traitors to their respective nation. Now, you can see again and again and again this attitude towards them as agents and traitors crops up. I think it is a fairly unhelpful approach because people rarely risk their life, career, convenience for just being agents. I think we can safely agree that there are people who feel very strongly about their ethnic identity in the one country and also in the other. Now, what could explain it better?
Well, I think we have to go to the peculiarities of Bulgarian, respectively, Macedonian ethnogenesis. There isn't much time, so I'm not going to go very deep into this. We'll leave it to the questions. I'll just state, for the time being, that if one takes the Bulgarian perspective, even if one assumes that there was a bigger Bulgarian nation, it is not inconceivable that one part of it, for whatever reasons, may develop separatist tendencies. If one takes the Macedonian perspective, things may look quite different. Rather than seeing a separation from a wider Bulgarian nation, it could see the Macedonians as a nation that was hitherto oppressed by this pro-Bulgarian or Bulgarian narrative, and it has just found its feet and is disassociating itself from perceived bigger entities. Again, this is nothing unusual in European terms, and this is one of the biggest problems when one talks with people in both Bulgaria and Macedonia. They think that they are unique, and they have this unique set of agents or traitors that undermine the respective nation. Plenty of cases in Europe and beyond Europe, but let's limit ourselves to Europe, there are individuals and groups that are habitually assigned to a particular nation that they do not wish to belong. Just limiting ourselves to the Slavic nations, one can pick up the Silesians, Moravians, and the Rusyns, and there are remarkable similarities between their cases and the cases of Macedonians, respectively Bulgarians. Now, this is just to show where Silesia is. Silesia, and further down is Moravia. Silesia is here. And now the bulk of it is in Poland, a little bit in the Czech Republic. Moravia is here. So there is an association, Moravane, Moravians. In the Czech census of 2011, 108,000 claim to speak a separate Moravian language, and one can assume that these people have an ethnic Moravian orientation. The people that declared themselves Moravians was actually much smaller. But this association, Moravane, organizes torchlit parades in Brno and Olomouc. They protest against Prague over-centralization. They think they're historically being oppressed by Prague and by the Czech narrative. They think that Moravians had a far more illustrious past than the Czechs because there was a greater Moravia as one of the first Slavic states, and the Czechs are just upstarts, etc., etc. So grievances and claims that one can easily see the similarities with narratives closer to the Balkans. If one looks at the autonomous, the Silesians, it is actually a more acute problem because Poland in many ways is a less liberal state than the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic takes a sort of Schwaikian, a humorous attitude to the Moravians. If they want to be Moravians, so be it. And they're not particularly cared. They don't drag them through the courts. With Poland, it's a bit more problematic. There is also the German connection with the Silesians. So about 800,000 people declared themselves of Silesian nationality in the 2011 census, Polish census. There are plenty of statements by Polish politicians who think that that borders on betrayal and treachery. There was even a case, again, being dragged to Strasbourg, Gorzelik against Poland, where it was not this autonomous group, which is relatively moderate, but another more extreme pro-independence Silesian organization that had problems with the Polish courts. So the Silesians, those who consider themselves Silesians, think that they're not ethnic Poles, and the narrative, of course, in Poland is that they are ethnic Poles, just as being have been Germanized severely or whatever over time. Now, so far we have been talking about Macedonians as a given. But even if one forgets the name Macedonia, and for the sake of argument, considers that there was some unidentified, nationally unaffiliated Vardarska Banovina, or whatever Vardarska entity, Still, even without the name Macedonia, the very fact that this this territory of what is now the Republic of Macedonia was part for quite a long time of Royal Yugoslavia and before that of Serbia would have marked it differently from the rest of Bulgaria. And even to this day, this association with a more distant Slav nation, the Serbs, is culturally very important in the Republic of Macedonia. You only have to switch to Macedonian television and see what they watch and how important the Serbian culture is, popular culture in particular. So the Serbosphere, Yugosphere, rather, is far more important than associations with Bulgaria. And this has led to a differently codified language and a fairly different culture. Nothing unusual in European terms. If one takes the Ukrainians and the Belarusians, one thing that clearly marks them off the Russians is this layer of centuries of Polish influence over them. And linguistically, they're closer, they're part of the Eastern Slavic group, but culturally, many of them see themselves as closer to the Poles. Another thing that has happened with Macedonians, and here we go to the more kind of entertainment level and the level of stereotypes, the Macedonians on a popular level have internalized some Serb stereotypes and jokes, if you will, of Bulgarians. Stupid men, Tatars, non-Slavs, non-Europeans. Incidentally, these things are much rarer to find in Serbia proper than in Macedonia. About Serbia, you can read about them in 19th century books. And as of early 20th century, but they're not particularly popular. I think the Serbs had a few more prominent enemies after the Bulgarians. So they're not particularly focused on Bulgarians, they don't particularly... some of these things stand, but the preoccupation with Bulgarians being Tatars rather than Slavs is something that is Serbian by origin, but you can find it almost exclusively now in the Republic of Macedonia. You only have to go to a football match to hear the Tatars and all that. And also the argument that Bulgarians are not really Slavs, and also Asiatics and non-Europeans, again something that is of Serbian provenance, but you can find it much better preserved in the Republic of Macedonia. Now, the name, however, is not without importance. The name of Macedonia carries its own mystique, and it also brings us to another association that is very important for the contemporary Macedonians, and this is the association with post-1830s Greece. And I emphasize the post-1830s Greece because the independent Greece was very different from the Rumbilet, from the Orthodox community, Greek language, culture-dominated Orthodox community that existed before independent Greece. These were two very different communities, but Macedonia was influenced inordinately by precisely this 1830s Greece, and with its focus on classical history, on ancient history, etc., etc. Again, nothing unusual. Think of how Silesians have been influenced not just by the Czechs but also by the Germans, despite their closeness to the Poles. Think about how Ukrainian Galicians have been influenced not just by the Poles but also by the Austrian. And it is part and parcel of this association with Greece that it is considered very important by many people in contemporary Macedonia, and you had certainly seen it with the ethnic Macedonian activists in independent Macedonia, this connection with antiquity, this importance of a glorious classical past. Now, another 5 minutes? Okay. Just to throw in an argument, this importance of antiquity, this importance of the classical past, could have produced in the 19th century another nation similar to the Macedonians. And this is what I've put here. I would just mark it very, very quickly, the Thracians as a might have been nation. Another Greek or classical name. Very clearly in the literature of the end of the 19th century, you can see that there was this self-identification as Thracians, and seeing other Bulgarians, particularly the ones around Sofia, as thick heads and savages. And there could have been a founding father, Ivan Vazov, the classic of Bulgarian literature, actually has several fairly prominent Thracian writings, where he makes this argument that Thrace was really quite different from the other lands of, in Bulgaria, because it actually had won the freedom for the Bulgarians. It was the one that was rebelling, the other Bulgarians were not particularly involved in that, and etc., etc. But and also the argument being made that Thrace, the lands south of the Balkan Range and all the way to the Aegean, was something quite distinct and something that has effectively made Bulgaria what it was. And why this nation didn't happen? Well, we can talk about this in the question time. But this was an opportunity that wasn't realized. Now, finally, what recommendation could be made to alleviate problems between the two countries? And this is, again, strictly from my own perspective, my own understanding of what is best in the situation. My argument would be that in the Bulgarian case, administrative pressure should be stopped. Bulgaria should try and more closely emulate the Czech Republic with its quite liberal attitude to ethnic self-identification. If it wants to convince these people who consider themselves ethnic Macedonians that they belong to the Bulgarian nation, it has to find other ways than administrative pressure. One possible way is a broader horizontal concept of Bulgarianness that gives greater room to regional and dialectal. Interestingly enough, the pre-1944 Bulgaria was much more liberal in this respect. It was much more accommodating of regional and dialectal differences. And what we have in Bulgaria at the moment is a much more sort of a socialist straitjacket country that sort of top-down codification of what is right and what is wrong when one speaks. And regions in Bulgaria are being seen, looked down because of that. Just one thing worth remembering is about pre-1944 Bulgaria, especially if one looks at 1903, the classical text of Macedonian ethnic nationalism on Macedonian matters has been published in Sofia. It was not oppressed by the Bulgarian state. It actually was the pro-Bulgarian Macedonian activists that tried to confiscate and destroy much of these, not the Bulgarian state. So the Bulgarian state was quite indifferent whether such books would be published. For Macedonia, a similar thing. Stop administrative pressure on self-described ethnic Bulgarians and find other means to convince them that they naturally belong to the titular nation. And perhaps if a broader vertical concept of Macedonianness is considered, that allows for historical discontinuities. And in this respect, just to throw in one last thing, it may help both nations to reread Misirkov from 1903 on the Macedonian matters. Now, 3 points why Misirkov of 1903 was so modern and subversive, and is so modern and subversive. Now, Misirkov in 1903 in the Macedonian on Macedonian matters accepted that the ancestors of would-be Macedonians called themselves Bulgarians, but argued that this was not an argument against the emergence of a new nation. He also did not explain Macedonian nationhood formation in medieval times, but strictly post-1978. He also considered Vumero, Vumaoro, and Imaro, the internal Macedonian Adrianople revolutionary organization, as Bulgarian exarchist organization under a pan-Macedonian fig leaf. So that's, we are already moving towards the discussion. Finally, someone who likes manga, an artist from Macedonia, this is his vision of relations between Bulgaria and Macedonia. Good as yogurt. And with this, I will conclude.
Thank you very much indeed. We have a little bit of time for questions now, so I'll open the floor. If you could perhaps identify yourself But I will take Veselin first.
Veselin Dimitrov from the LFC. Kirill, thank you for your excellent presentation. I certainly learned a lot from it. I have a number of questions which partly go beyond the framework of this specific presentation, but I think do address some of the fundamental questions that this presentation raises. First of all, what I find amazing from a longer-term historical perspective is how successful communism in Bulgaria was in destroying Bulgarian irredentism towards Macedonia. One of the most interesting things that has happened, or rather not happened, after 1989 is the reappearance of Bulgarian irredentism towards Macedonia. Now, in many ways, that was going against the grain. As you know, Bulgarian irredentism towards Macedonia had been an extremely powerful movement going back to the 19th century and up to the Second World War, including the Second World War. Do you have any explanation of why communism was so successful in changing the fundamental trajectory and essentially destroying Bulgarian irredentism towards Macedonia? Secondly, in the same vein, the Macedonian problem within Bulgaria had been a rather serious one before communism. As you know, in the interwar period, it was an extremely destabilizing factor in Bulgarian politics. So, once again, we have a question: why was communism so successful in destroying this as a problem? After 1989, this was not a problem in Bulgarian politics in any serious way. And that is in sharp contrast to the situation before 1944 and certainly before 1934. And then perhaps a third question, if I may. If we accept Bulgarian irredentism towards Macedonia had been essentially destroyed by 1989 as a serious political phenomenon, why has Bulgaria found it so difficult to establish genuinely constructive relations with the Republic of Macedonia after 1991? Given the fact that the main obstacle, at least on the Bulgarian side, had been removed, why has Bulgaria found it so difficult to establish what could be described as constructive relations rather than sort of tolerant coexistence?
Now, about the communism successfully destroying Bulgarian irredentism. It's an interesting situation, but I think one of the reasons is just the passing of time. Communism lasted in Bulgaria 45 years. This is a lot of people who were involved in Bulgarian irredentism were physically destroyed, and many others grew old, and their families stopped being so interested in that. 45 years is a big period because one has to remember thinking of the 1920s and 30s, and going back to your second question about the Macedonian problem, it's the refugees. This was a burning issue. It was not a burning issue after 45 years. 45 years is a long time. These people have become acculturated. They've mixed up with locals. And someone like Evgeny Dainov, for example, who was a prominent activist in post-1989, well, I mean, he can be claimed as Macedonian or he's of Macedonian origin, but he's completely uninterested in either irredentism or anything to do with Macedonia, to be honest. I mean, his the buzzword post 1989 was democracy, and perhaps we have to thank Jelle for that. I mean, he was sort of dull and consistent in this respect. Democracy, democracy, democracy. It was even annoying at the time, as if this was the only thing and it was panacea and it will solve everything. But that was the buzzword. It was not the nation. It was democracy, and the kind of pro-nationalist rallies were few and far between, excepting the issue of the Turks, which was an issue that happened in the communist period. It has very little to do with pre-1944 Bulgarian nationalism, very little to do with it. It was part and parcel of this Zhivkov, anti-Zhivkov, communism, anti-communism thing. So I'll leave it aside. But when there was, not for want of trying, I mean, like Vymro, the internal internal revolutionary Macedonian organization in Bulgaria, an offshoot of the Macedonian Brotherhoods, a peculiar offshoot, shall we say, of these Brotherhoods, try to organize, for example, rallies against the Treaty of Niue. If I'm not mistaken, the first one gathered about either 100 people or more charitably 500 people. Anything to do with Macedonia hasn't gathered more than 1,000 people. Compare this with the 1 million march in Salonika in Greece. It bears no comparison. So, I mean, you can regret it or you can extol it, but this is how it was. It was for some reason, Macedonia just doesn't excite Bulgarians very much. It did excite them much more in the interwar period than before. I mean, one of the and again, it goes back to the very prominent position of people originating in Macedonia actually being born there and reaching high positions in Bulgaria. These were the people, these were the drivers of Bulgarian irredentism towards Macedonia. I mean, just one thing. When King Ferdinand, or Tsar Ferdinand of Bulgaria, was contemplating, allegedly, some compromise with the Greeks, and with the Greeks concerning Aegean Macedonia and Salonika in particular, he was visited by three prominent, trying to find a polite word for them, basically vagabonds. Vagabonds, one of whom later became an ambassador to Berlin. This is Rizov, a prominent Macedonian family, who basically said, well, we'll kill you, we'll cut your throat if you compromise with the Greeks. And the king was impressed, shall we say. And many people got threats from such cutthroats, like Rizov. This was not an unusual situation. And these people were, fortunately, in some respects, were cutting each other's throats in the 20s and 30s, rather than, well, they actually killed plenty of other people also. So there was nothing fortunate in that. But they clearly marked the 1920s all the way until 1934 with these killings, which gave the Macedonians in general in Bulgaria a very bad name. And particularly the agrarian party was sick and tired of this. And Stambulivski was voicing this in the 1920s, basically calling on in one meeting with Yugoslavs and the Serbs, basically saying, I'll take them all and make them good citizens. So I think to try to address your question, one thing is the passage of time. The other thing is that the younger generations that were not born in Macedonia itself but already born in Bulgaria did not feel so strongly as the older generations. Maybe also gentrification of these people. They were not. And maybe they had more to lose in 1989 than they had in 1920s and 30s, when many of them were basically their livelihood was roaming on the streets. Why, despite this, was so difficult to establish, is so difficult to establish constructive relations? I think, again, Zhelev actually bears a lot of the blame because he was ill-advised when recognizing Macedonia to make a fuss about the language. we recognize the country, but we don't recognize the nation, we don't recognize the language. I think no one asked him about this. This issue should not have been raised at that point. Even Zhivkov has actually signed agreements that said Bulgarian and Macedonian. This famous formula of 1999, which the constitutional, signed in Macedonia according to the constitution of the Republic of Macedonia, and signed in Bulgaria according to the constitution of the Republic of Bulgaria. This cumbersome phrase is an exercise in tongue twisting, as far as I'm concerned. But there is a deadwood of people in the cultural establishment, in particular, that quite a few of them go back to Zhivkov's time, that they have a particular opinion and they have also a particular method of how to approach the Macedonic question. Things should not be allowed, things should be banned, that's their approach. Part and parcel of what... So it was not even a nationalist issue, it was more like this communist straitjacket come nationalism thing, which goes back to Zhivkov. I think Bulgarians should have been just a bit more relaxed about this whole Macedonian thing, but all prime ministers, just whatever they felt about this, they didn't want to create problems for themselves. It was not precisely because it was not a particularly big issue, they eventually gave way to this lobby, cultural lobby, in the Academy of Sciences, in the media, whatever, that basically say this far and no further. That's my impression.
Gentlemen there.
Hello, my name is Dimitri Dimitrov from the LSE. Thank you very much, Mr. Dresden, for your insightful presentation. And I wanted to ask you, recently I've explored the Communist Party archive in Bulgaria regarding the period immediately after 1945, when the process of Macedonization started in the period area. And I was really interested, to what extent do you believe that that the domestic population in Imperial Macedonia welcomed the imposition of Macedonian nation identity, language, and history? Was there any signs, were there any signs of opposition, at least among the intelligentsia in the area, and did they readily welcome this new policy by the Communist Party, at least for up until 1948?
Well, it's good you're studying the archives. That's the best. That's the best approach, because going straight to the archives is a luxury and wonderful thing, because you can make up your mind for yourself. On the basis of what I've seen about this issue, there was a considerable opposition in Pirin Macedonia, but one has to bear in mind that the opposition would have been even greater had not the leading figures from the Mikhailovist wing been destroyed physically, often without trial. And we're talking about very prominent people, journalists in Sofia, journalists locally. And these people were physically removed, either to concentration camps or dispatched without trial. That weakened, obviously, the response. Even so, we know that the communist allies within the Fatherland Front didn't understand this policy and objected to it. These were the communist satellite parties. As far as the opposition, as much as it existed in 1946, it still existed. The agrarians or the social democrats, they were quite vocal in their condemnation of this policy. And it has nothing to do with their attitude to Yugoslavia. Actually, both the social democrats and the agrarians, especially the agrarians, Plavne, were staunchly pro-Yugoslav. These Plavne agrarians were the most pro-Yugoslav force in Bulgaria in the interwar period. That did not actually translate into them supporting the new Yugoslav line on ethnic Macedonianism. Now, as far as how much it was welcome locally, well, it's hard to say. I think some people certainly welcomed it. And one has also to bear in mind that there is a popular canard that the Macedonian identity is an invention of the Comintern in 1934, you can fix it in time. You go back to 1860 and you find the first time when people call themselves Macedonians, so it's not the common term. There have been individuals that consider themselves primarily as Macedonian, and it has a lot to do with the magic of the name Macedonian, and a lot to do with Alexander, a lot to do with antiquity. It's such a glorious thing, as a Macedonian writer, Simeon Simov. I remember a discussion with him in 1992. This was one of the first discussions between Bulgarian participants and Macedonian participants. There was, such was the level of the lack of contact between them. So Simov commented on the same issue by saying, of course, it is much better to be associated with someone glorious as Alexander than with some Khans from Central Asia or whatever, meaning this Bulgarian-Turkic connection, which gives rise to the Tartar appellation on football matches. Yes, the magic of the name has exercised things. And I go back even further and say it is impossible to understand why this name would have such a magic and why there would be people calling themselves Macedonians from 1860 onwards, but not before. One has to think of Greek education and its focus on antiquity and the glory of antiquity. So paradoxically, the people who take such inordinate pride in antiquity in ancient times are quite similar to 19th century Greeks, maybe not even contemporary Greeks, but 19th century Greeks, in this obsession with antiquity. And even this obsession with antiquity in Greece was a Western import, as we know. It ran into opposition. The Orthodox Church in Greece was not particularly enamored with this glorification of the pagans, the Hellenes. So, yes, there were people, and there are... Macedonians shall always be with us in this respect. There is the dream of some people in Bulgaria that there would be a time when all Macedonians would see that they're not Macedonians. It's just about as possible as to imagine that in the Czech Republic there would never be people who would think that they're not Moravian first rather than Czechs. A small group of people, but very prominent in this respect. So, people choices, basically. So, in 1946, there were people who liked that. There were people who saw it as an opportunity for them. They went to study in Skopje, etc., etc. And if one goes to the 1990s and on, if one looks at Omulin activists, it is an important, it's almost a rite of passage for them to actually go and study in Macedonia and learn Macedonian, because they actually don't speak it. There may be ethnic Macedonians in Bulgaria, but there are practically no ethnic Macedonian language speakers, because the language was codified in a different place, on slightly different dialects, and is not much known, actually, in Imperial Macedonia.
Thank you. Because from the numbers from the census, both in Bulgaria and Macedonia, it seems that there are not that many ethnic Bulgarians in Macedonia and ethnic Macedonians in Bulgaria. Certainly both countries have much larger minorities, ethnic minorities, but even more important. And yet, this whole discussion about Macedonian nationhood and Bulgarian nationhood and so on, and their kind of validity of the narratives in which they rely seems to be kind of disproportionate to the size of the minorities in the countries. How do you explain that? I mean, are the minorities really what's driving this whole discussion?
Excellent question. It is indeed disproportionate. It is indeed disproportionate. I mean, if one takes like the geopolitical interests of Bulgaria, for example, Bulgaria should be far more focused on relations with Serbia rather than with Macedonia. For some reason, Macedonia gets a lot of press in Bulgaria, inordinately so, concerning its relative unimportance economically or in terms of transport links and all that to Bulgaria. Bulgaria also gets disproportionate attention in Macedonia, perhaps, well, actually even more than in the case of Bulgaria, because Bulgaria is a bigger country, and if you go to North Bulgaria, the interest in Macedonia is about zero. Places like Russe or Varna or whatever, apart from some people that have family connections with Macedonia. South of the Balkan range, the interest in Macedonia is greater, simply Macedonia is a bit closer. And the number of people related to Macedonia are greater. But why it has been so disproportionately important? Well, I think I have with me the court decisions of the European Court, how it dealt with both cases of the respectively... case of the Ratko Association not being banned, and the case of the Omo I Linden being banned, United Macedonia being banned. And it comes very clearly in these court decisions that it is seen as a burning issue in both countries. That in the Macedonian case, that the narrative is being questioned. What did the Macedonian state argued for in Strasbourg? Well, one of the things is that just give me a sec. A negation of Macedonian ethnicity is tantamount to violence and violent destruction of the constitutional order. Now, the Constitutional Court based a decision to ban Ratko for the following reasons. According to Ivan Mihailov's teaching, Macedonian ethnicity never existed on this territory, but belonged to the Bulgarians from Macedonia, etc., etc. The promotion of fascist ideas of Ivan Mihailov concerning the Macedonian Bulgarians who were unknown in history, legal science and practice. So Macedonian Bulgarians are being seen as unknown in history, legal science and practice. The president of Macedonia at the time, I think it actually this was Trajkovski, he said there is no place for a man who claims that Macedonians are ethnic Bulgarians, concerning the Ratko founder. Concerning the why the Constitutional Court in Bulgaria banned United Macedonians, the argument was that they're trying to convert the population. So conversion of the population was, that was one thing. The other thing is that they were inclined to separatism. So you can see the fears of the state. The fear of the Macedonian state is that there is an argument that strikes, of these pro-Bulgarian organizations, they support an argument that strikes at the very heart of the Macedonian identity. This violates the constitution. At that time, there was a preamble of the constitution that called Macedonian national state, etc., etc. It is seen as impermissible to question this particular narrative of the Macedonian identity by people, and also it claimed that it is illegitimate to talk of Macedonian Bulgarians as an entity unknown in history, legality, and whatever. The fears of the Bulgarian state is separatism, one thing, and fears of conversion. That is, if you allow them to function, more people may call themselves Macedonians. So you can see also why this would be assume such an inordinate importance. It is very hard for like Turkish organizations to convert Bulgarians into Turks, but it is seen as easier for Macedonian organizations to make Bulgarians into Macedonians, and vice versa. Maybe because the nations are closer, and they share the same past, only interpreted it differently. So it also has not been unknown that someone who considered himself ethnic Bulgarian at one point, has called thought of himself as ethnic Bulgarian at another point. Misirkov himself has periods when he was more Bulgarian, more Macedonian, etc., etc. It's not unusual. That kind of fluidity creates particular problems between Bulgarians and Macedonians. In paradoxically, the very closeness creates far greater problems. And also, the very existence of a Macedonian nation, all the existence of a Bulgarian nation, questions some central tenets of both narratives. It's like, to whom belong Cyril and Methodius? to whom belong the oldest Slavonic tongue, the oldest Slavonic literature, to whom belong the 19th century uprisings, or so the early 20th century uprisings, etc., etc. These are sensitive issues, and obviously I'm not trying to make excuses, but you can see why people would feel more aggrieved about them than about an Albanian organization in Macedonia or a Turkish organization in Bulgaria.
Unless there's any last question. All right, can you keep them really brief, because we're just about out of time.
And my question is about the role of religion in your research. Does it help to foster this ethno-nationalist separate identity in Bulgarian and Macedonian minorities? Or is it used by the central authorities to divide them? Because, as you know, Turkey is fighting Kurdish secessionism by Islamizing Kurds.
But Turks are, Kurds are Muslims anyway.
Yes, some of them.
Yes, there are the Yazidi, of course. Yes, yes, certainly, yes.
No.
I believe that the only way that we can get a point where we can find actually, because there is one truth, if we to look at the history, if we can say that, is there a way that we can kill all the emotions, both in Bulgaria and Macedonia, and to find a solution which will make both nations happy, then we can go forward and look at the future and forget about all the problems.
I should just quickly point out on this one that my last trip to Skopje was incredibly illuminating when I went to the main museum there, and I didn't have very long before I had to leave, and I wanted to have a look around, and I wasn't allowed to go around on my own. I had to be escorted by a guide so that I would get the authentic, and I've often joked, well, with Veselin and my colleague Spiros, I don't know who I'd have more fun being with, a Greek or a Bulgarian, looking around that museum, because of the way that it was presented. So it was just, I think, a very interesting question.
Starting with your question, I think an important reason why there is so much fascination with these arguments and with the past in general is that the present is quite miserable in both countries. And many people compensate for miserable presence with a glorious past. And if there is greater focus on making the present sort of more livable, I'm not saying glorious, but there probably would be less interest in quarreling about who did what in the 10th century. Or not to speak of the times of Alexander. But things as they are, I'm not particularly optimistic. I think we'll see several more moves locally before the relative exhaustion of these narratives. I initially actually wanted to talk about antiquization, but thought better of it and stuck to a safer subject, which... as James said, was quite controversial in itself, but antiquization is an even greater minefield, I think we'll probably have to talk about it at some other point. Both countries have to find a way to, I don't know, employ their citizens in something more productive than producing kind of historical narratives. So you're quite right in this respect. Concerning the role of religion, religion actually doesn't play much of a role in these Bulgarian-Macedonian debates, quite unlike other debates in both countries concerning Muslims, Turks, or Albanians, which we haven't talked about. I think both ethnic Macedonian activists in Bulgaria and ethnic Bulgarian activists in Macedonia have made a fuss about the respective national church, Orthodox Christian Church, organizing parishes locally. They have made a fuss about it, nothing has come out of it, and probably wouldn't come. The Macedonian state is extraordinarily sensitive about other Orthodox churches operating inside Macedonia. One only has to look at the case of Jovan Vranishkovski and his Ohrid Archbishopric, the kind of an affiliate organization of the Serbian Orthodox Church, and what kind of problems it has encountered in Macedonia. I think, again, this shows extraordinary insecurity. You can understand why, but it doesn't quite justify it.
Okay, before I say thank you, just to make a quick announcement about our next two visiting speakers. The next one will be in 2 weeks' time, as usual, in this room on the 24th of February, and that will be Dr. Nicole Lindstrom from the University of York speaking on the politics of Europeanisation and economic nationalisms in Estonia and Slovenia. And then on the 10th of March, the final visiting speaker of this term and this year, Dr. Anka Puska from Goldsmiths University of London, speaking on understanding Roman nomadism today, the case of the Romanian Roma. Kirill, thank you very, very much for coming along this evening and giving such an interesting presentation and obviously very fact-filled and historically rich presentation. Yes, I think debate continues, but as I say, thank you very much indeed for coming along this evening.